Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello and welcome to News Trash here on The Geek Show, the weekly episode in which we talk about what's been happening in the world of news. It's either a YouTube show or a series or a podcast, wherever you get your podcast from, on the Impossible Mission Omnifeed. We feature on that. I am Rob, and as ever, I am joined by the man who reads the news, and hopefully this week he has a face, because last week we were disembodied voices, but yes, the man with the news, Rob.
Hello! And yes, I have a face. It's here. Half covered by microphone, half covered by beard. A beard phone.
It was a disastrous week last week, because basically everything which could have went wrong did go wrong. And yeah. I recorded hastily a little cold open, so at least it starts better and with some sort of explanation. And I put no effort into that cold open. It was like I shot it in a cave, and I really should have put a bit more effort into it. My bad.
I will admit, it was just your face during the cold open was just kind of the face of long suffering. Just kind of, oh, do I have to do this again?
Yeah, well, it is what it is. It is what it is. Fingers crossed. I crossed my fingers weird. Fingers crossed. It's a better recording this week.
At least you can. At least you can. I think I've got RSI in that finger.
That's his index finger and one of his hands for you audio people.
It's the finger people. That you click the left mouse button with. You do, you know, it's the finger that does the scroll wheel, the left mouse button if you're right-handed, everything like that. And so I don't know why, but my finger is just hurting like crazy. So when I'm holding it straight up, it just looks like I'm making a point.
There you go, video game fans. PC gaming is bad for you. And there's the science for it. I'm taking a leap of faith there, but I'm sticking with it.
That's a hell of a leap of faith.
Hey, if you're a console gamer, all you're going to get is knackered thumbs.
Yeah. Oh, God, can you imagine if you just don't care and you play games on anything? You're going to end up with just knackered thumbs, knackered fingers.
An arthritic mess. on that...
An arthritic mess.
That killer segue I just set up. Surely there's something which leads off from that.
There is, actually.
Oh, wow.
There is. there is. We talked about the PlayStation VR, last week.
Well, they're going to be doing an updated one. They basically announced it, said it's going to be part of PS5. It's going to be a one cable job. And there's been all sorts of patents for new types of software, or hardware, I should say, where you interact with the game rather than it just being sort of old Move controllers. It's actually a new new thing.
Yeah, and the thing is, you've actually jumped straight into the story, because everyone's focused on the fact that Sony, basically, it looked to a lot of people that Sony was trying to patent a banana as a controller, but that wasn't the point of it at all. The whole idea was that what Sony were proposing was this system where any normal, everyday household object could be used as a game controller in the PlayStation VR space, which I think is a really interesting and fascinating idea.
The banana was an AR thing, an augmented reality thing, rather than all bananas are controllers.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I really like about this idea that Sony have put forward. Because do you remember I was talking about, a few weeks ago, I was talking about micro switches in joysticks and how we only ever had like the joystick with the single button, and that single button did everything, right? And this to me is kind of a throwback to the simpler times of using a controller when a controller could literally, you just needed like a joystick and a single button to do everything in a game. You didn't need like multiple buttons or a whole keyboard with all sorts of keys to suppress and stuff like that. You didn't need all the bells and whistles. You could get away with doing things really simply. And I think that's a really effective approach for VR because, so, in a sense...
What's the story then? Are we just talking about PSVR 2?
Well, Kind of, yeah, because in a sense, the whole PlayStation, one of the things that has happened with virtual reality gaming in general is that the actual controllers have become kind of over-engineered. They do a lot of stuff, and because they do a lot of stuff, it kind of removes you from the VR experience, if that makes sense. That's why games like Beat Saber...
I've not played any VR games.
I've played a few, and the problem that I've found with them is that I'm always forever trying to remember what button does what on the controller, and so I can never immerse myself into the game itself, VR has been more of an experience than a game.
You can't really immerse yourself in it because you've got like this massive headset on, and at the end of the day, you've got a massive headset on and a controller in your hand, you know, pressing the buttons. It's not immersive, but for me, I've seen these things where they've sort of, I know I'm kind of going off on sort of Impossible Mission tangent here.
Yeah.
But you get these more cap gloves. I think if you could find a way to bring down the cost of more cap gloves and interact it with the VR headset, I think you won now. You done?
Well, we did attend a seminar a few years ago over at our local university where there was a company who was showcasing the gloves that they were doing that worked in the kind of the virtual reality 3D space, if you remember.
Yeah,
and,
I do know you
that was fascinating. So that would be a fascinating idea to push forward, just being able to actually have haptic feedback within the gloves so you could feel and touch objects in VR.
Maybe that's where that idea came from. In my head, I was remembering that. Just, you know, little thing tucked away in the back of
possibly,
the memory banks.
Possibly, yeah. But I do... See, this is the thing. As I said, whenever I've tried VR gaming, I've been standing there thinking, okay, I've got to remember... trying to remember what button does what on the controller, or if I'm using the Oculus, trying to remember what does what. But with something simple like Beat Saber, it's just literally waving them about like that. You know, that's it. That's all you do. And so you don't have to remember anything, so you can immerse yourself into the game. Do you see why I like the idea of just winding back the whole over-engineering of the controller and going for something really simple?
Yeah, I mean, just to relate it to something which has actually happened. There's been a few trailers that have been released for new PSVR games, and with the exception of one, I think it's basically Spy Job Simulator. All of them seem to be proper games.
Yeah.
There's a survival game, there's a JRPG, there seems to be sort of like a four-player co-op Left 4 Dead survival shooter with these rock zombies.
Is that After the Fall, was it?
Yeah, I think so. There's a shoot-em-up, a first-person shooter sort of... not Call of Duty, but somewhere in between Call of Duty and GoldenEye, like the Venn diagram of that, the middle point where them two things meet. So these are all experiences which are proper games with the exception of that spy job simulator thing.
See, I like the look of the spy job simulator.
It's just a
I don't
laugh,
know why, but
it
appeals
that's,
to
that,
me.
That's all it is. It's just a dumb laugh, you know. But at the end of the day, all of those things, it's weird, the PlayStation and VR in general, because essentially what it is a platform which has not really had any sort of mainstream attention. It's kind of been this niche specialist item. But at the same time, it's kind of matured in the background without it having a great deal of attention. So this is sort of like the PlayStation VR, the first one, pardon my tortured phrasing, but it's kind of like the beta phase to a proper, legit, mainstream attempting VR machine.
Well, one of the games that caught my attention on this PlayStation VR kind of whatever it was that Sony did.
Info dump.
I can't remember what you call them. Yeah, info dump. That's as good a term as any. But that JRPG style MMO called Zenith. The reason why that particular thing caught my attention was because as soon as I saw it, my first thought was, this is, damn it, what's the name of it? It was on the Dreamcast, it was one of the first MMOs that
Aside from Arcadia there. It's the other one, Sega one.
Damn it, yeah, Phantasy Star.
Yeah, got there eventually.
That was it.
I did my best.
I was thinking it begins with a P.
Willem Dafoe eyes, and you remembered. So I think that's my responsibility that you remembered there.
But anyway, when I was watching the trailer for it, my immediate reaction was, this feels a lot like the original Phantasy Star that came out on the Dreamcast. Because I remember when that came out, and I remember just how groundbreaking a thing it was to have this complete MMORPG on a console, and you could connect with other players around the world, and you could basically play the game. Yes, okay, it was dial-up and everything like that, but it was something very different to Ultima and stuff like that. That was the standard norm at the time. And so now you got this, and I'm hoping that they can build on something like Zenith and do something even better.
Yeah, it looks very pit-by-numbers RPG, but you got to start somewhere.
It is. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't think Zenith is the first one. I think that there have been a couple of attempts at an MMO in kind of the VR space already. But I like the look of Zenith, and I like how colourful it is, and I like the fact that it's trying to absorb you into a different world.
So I reckon the PSVR 2 is going to be like 2023. I think that will be them trying to push VR into a bigger space. I don't think it's financially viable to do two consoles and sell just a few million devices each time. I think they need to sort of push it further in the future.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about how much they've sold, because we do actually have some figures.
Yes, we do, Rob. So yes, we do. Look, there he is. Yep. There's Ash. That's a figure.
Numbers.
That figure.
Yes, that figure. Anyway, these are just for the UK. We live in the UK, so we're mainly interested in UK numbers, but the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X, right? There were more than 3 million games consoles that were sold in the UK last year. 450,000 PlayStation 5 machines, 310,000 Xbox Series X consoles, and 1.5 million Nintendo Switches.
Well, if that's like 2020 figures, that's not really fair, because they came out in, November, late October? I can't remember, when did they come out?
I think they're basically looking at it. They're looking at it kind of overlapping up to now. So it'll be 2020 plus a couple of extra months to basically include this year. So far, that's the latest data from GFK and GSD, who basically do the charts, and it was released by the Entertainment Retailers Association. And the latest report shows data on all three platforms. They had a much better year in 2020 compared with the year prior. So Xbox One and Xbox Series X consoles combined sold around 600,000 units, which is up from 500,000 for just the Xbox One the year before. And PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4 together sold around 900,000 units, which is up from 700,000. And the Switch dominated basically everything. 1.5 million units sold last year compared to 1 million units in 2019.
There's lots of caveats to that, though. I mean, we're talking about both Xbox One and PlayStation 4. We're in the final year of their being the main driver for those companies. So, honestly, the sales figures do nosedive when there's a new console on the horizon.
And not only that, I mean, one of the things that has greatly affected the numbers, I think, more so than anything, has been the pandemic. And I think that when it comes to the availability of Nintendo Switches, they have been more readily available than the next gen consoles. Nintendo already had the production of the Switches, ongoing. I mean, the Switch is
it's
fourth
a mid-cycle.
Year
now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a mid-cycle. And Nintendo are actually bringing out the Nintendo Switch Pro later on this year.
It's never once been addressed as a Nintendo Switch Pro. This is what the press have called it. What Nintendo have said is they're releasing a new updated version of the Nintendo Switch with a 720p Samsung OLED screen. Anywhere have they mentioned Nintendo Switch Pro. It's like the same. There was original Nintendo Switch. And then there was a next Nintendo Switch after that with a bigger battery. Does that make them with a bigger battery a Nintendo Switch Extra? No, it's just all the same thing. No, just upgrading models. Models get upgraded with these console cycles. Yeah. Like the first PlayStation 3 wasn't the same as the one that was getting released the year after that. These models evolve. So calling them a pro is not accurate. It's kind of dumb at the end of the day.
Yes. Okay. Okay. What you've just touched on is kind of, it's an ongoing, well, I hesitate to call it a problem, but it is an ongoing thing that happens in kind of the technology space over the last 4 or 5 years. And you see it especially with mobile phones, where they call a mobile phone a pro. Now, you and I were talking about there's a new Sony phone that has been doing the rounds where they actually call it a pro and mean it literally because it's made for video professionals. It has various functions that the average mobile phone consumer is not going to be interested in using. But if you are doing videos, especially if you are out in the field doing videos, this functionality of the phone, these systems that are built into the phone become massively useful to you if video is your thing and you're doing it remotely and you need something that's compact and more portable. So in that case, Pro becomes useful. It is actually made for professionals. But then you get the average mobile phone where it's just a little bit more powerful, maybe has a better screen, they call it a pro, and you think, okay, yeah, it's not really a pro. And that's exactly what you're talking about. A lot of the press have been calling it the Nintendo Switch and Pro. Nintendo have never called it that. Okay, you are totally right on that. Yes, it is a 720 OLED screen. I think the thing that I found most interesting about it, though, is the fact that it is going to be native 4K on TVs.
Yeah, but it's...
I mean, the OLED screen means that the battery will last longer, right? The OLED screen means the battery will definitely last longer. But the fact that it's 4K on normal screens is, I think, a big thing for a Nintendo console, because up until now, you've not had that from Nintendo.
Yeah, but it's still not a pro.
It's still not a pro. It's a pro. I'm just going
Nintendo by haven't I mean the Nintendo handhelds have had all sorts of 3D, 3DS, 3D, all sorts. I can't even begin to dip into how many Nintendo consoles have done for the handheld there environment, platform, marketplace, whatever. But yeah, this is Nintendo just making sure it's able to stand up as a piece of tech, and that will sell well as well.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I think does bear noting is the caveat to all of this, with Nintendo. And that's, from the developer side. There's been a long running complaint amongst developers for the Switch about the difference in resolution between the docked and the handheld mode. And if you are having 4K native resolution in docked mode, but you've only got 720 in handheld mode, that is just a massive gap to bridge for any developer in terms of graphical resolution, isn't it?
Just back to the sales, last year it was all Nintendo. In January, in this country at least, PlayStation 5 outsold the Switch. So its ascendancy has plateaued, but it's always been talked about for a while, as... It's Nintendo, not Sony or Microsoft, who's won. But Nintendo have done very, very well for themselves. So, it's a three-horse race. It's not like who's going to win, Sony or Microsoft. It's not like that anymore. Nintendo do operate in their own infrastructure with their own style and their own games, but they're still part of the industry of video games, and they're still very, very competitive, as those sales figures show. But I think they're not going to cost quite as much once the Xbox and the PS5 become much more available. The interesting thing though would be how many copies of the Xbox Series S will have sold. Because there was a story recently how the developers of Metro Exodus basically said they're having problems making a version which scales down to be playable on that device that they're happy with. So honestly, I thought when it was released, this is a machine which is essentially, it's going to be redundant as soon as games are exclusively made for the series machines.
Yeah, that's actually
The sales are like for them. Oh, I'm curious as to what the sales are like for them anyway.
Yeah, it's you did mention that Nintendo kind of operates in its own infrastructure. And we talked about just live service games and the Avengers game and stuff like that. I think it was last week.
Last week.
Or was it the week before? Square Enix has made an interesting move. They have, Forever Entertainment have worked with Square Enix before when they produced 2018's Fear Effect Sedna, right? And they also did the remake of Panzer Dragoon. Now, Square have approached Forever Entertainment and signed a deal with them for remakes of Square titles. Not just one. So, multiple remakes of Square titles. They haven't actually said which titles are getting remade. I have some ideas about which titles might possibly get remade. And apparently they're going to try and keep as much of the original game kind of intact, you know, in terms of the playability, the story, that sort of thing. So that's kind of giving up on new IPs to go back to what you've done before.
Yeah, I think this is the failure of Avengers, which has made them sort of readdress how they do things. Like, how much money they're put into that. I imagine they paid quite a lot of money on the license for Avengers. I mean, that is basically one of the most valuable properties you could ever have. Yeah. And they lost money on it. So, it was a failed experiment. So, I think this is a case of Square saying, what are we? What do we do that works? Let's get back to that and just stabilise for a while.
Yeah.
Do what people love.
I mean, the Final Fantasy VII remake sold a lot. A lot of people bought that, and a lot of people liked it. It did really well for Square. And, I mean, okay, they've done, like, updated versions of Final Fantasy VIII.
They did 12 Zodiac Age.
And 12 Zodiac Age. They've done HD remasters of 10 and 10 Part 2. A lot of people wanted a remake of Final Fantasy VIII. A lot of people were really wanting it. Because I think that's the key thing. A lot of people really liked Final Fantasy VII, but the introduction to Final Fantasy for the majority of Final Fantasy fans, the ones who actually kind of aren't as outspoken, but kind of make up the majority, was Final Fantasy VIII. I know more fans of Final Fantasy VIII and IX than I do of VII.
VII was my introduction, but I didn't like it that much. I thought it was kind of goofy. VIII I much preferred, and I think, honestly, if they're going to remake any, give 9 a shot, because that slept on.
Yeah. 9 is the one that always gets overlooked in favor of 7 and 8, and I think 9 is one of the best Final Fantasy games. Okay, I have a big soft spot for 8. I just like the whole idea of the Sorceress and the Knight. I think it works in terms of, you know, folklore and
also
stuff
they've done
that.
Other things besides Final Fantasy, but on the Final Fantasy, 6 would also be a decent shout.
6, I would love to see a remake.
But there's other stuff that they've done besides Final Fantasy. Remake the Bouncer.
Yeah, I mean, do not remake the Bouncer.
And,
no.
And this time when you remake
you, sir, are a monster. Right, nobody deserves. I'm pointing at you with my broken finger. You, sir, are
this
a monster.
Time, though, when they remake it, actually put in controls besides the square button. So, like, the triangle, you can put, like, functions on. Circle as well. What about X?
Didn't you know they're Squaresoft? They only need the square button.
There's Rob's good joke for the month.
Oh, damn it. I've used it all up again, haven't I?
It's the stuff that Square could do, and I'm interested. But at the end of the day, this is all sort of, we cocked up with Avengers. Yeah. Let's get back to basics.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what games they do put out. What games? Because, I mean, the whole Mana series that they do is already kind of, that's already kind of Nintendo.
The Secret of Mana.
They've got all of that. Secret of Mana, Children of Mana, Sword of Mana, that sort of thing. They're already kind of focused on Nintendo consoles. So I think, you know, with stuff like Saga Frontier, that might be an interesting one to do.
Need some sort of brand recognition to remake it, I think.
Yeah. What was that one that they did where you could focus on particular parts of the body to attack? It was an RPG.
It wasn't Vagrant Story, was it? Pretty sure you could do that in Vagrant Story.
Yeah, Vagrant Story, that's it, yeah. Vagrant Story.
That'd take a hell of a remake. That might be an interesting... Because it
would take a hell of a remake, but...
Such an ugly game.
Yeah, it'd take a hell of a remake, but that might be an interesting one and a challenging one to do.
Yeah, I mean, the studio which they've challenged... They've not got a great back catalogue of work or good history of great games that they've released, so I don't think giving them...
Well,
the challenge of rebuilding something like that from scratch would be a bit of a bridge too far too soon.
The remake of Panzer Dragoon was all right, apparently.
Yeah, but that's not something you stake your house in, isn't it? Is it? Sorry. Something that's all right.
Well, Fear Effect Edna was okay as well.
Yeah, again, you're missing the point. Okay and all right is not... Yeah, let's mortgage the house on all right and fine. That's great. We're going to be okay as a company. We're not going bankrupt. But we're releasing all right, fine
all
games.
Right, all right,
and okay. And
the point is made.
It'll do. This is the house that
the
it'll
point
do
is
will
made.
Make.
All right. Okay, what about something like Front Mission? What about something like Front Mission?
I'd love to see that.
Which,
but whether, you know,
which is an interesting one.
Whether there's money in it, I'm not sure. Because, you know, I don't think mechs are all that popular. I mean, they're popular with the Gundam nerds, but beyond that, I don't think it really makes any bank. But yeah. I'd like to see it.
I'm trying to remember who made Grandia. Because we haven't had a Grandia game for a while. I wonder if it was Enix. I can't remember. But a remake of Grandia would be interesting.
Right. Who made Grandia? Search. Game Arts and Skinhead Games, apparently. Let's click
Game
on
Arts,
their Wikipedia.
Okay, so...
The Wikipedia, been in all sorts.
Because I think
it's been published by Entertainment Software, Sony, Ubisoft, Hudson Soft. I remember them. Square Enix, and most recently Gung Ho Online Entertainment.
See, I'm thinking that because Square Enix were the ones who published Grandia 3, and if they've got the license to publish Grandia as a franchise, a Grandia sequel or a Grandia remake, sorry, might be interesting. Because that's a game that a lot of people have never played before.
Yeah, they were kings of the PlayStation.
Just how good an RPG is.
They were kings of the PlayStation 1 RPG Square. They haven't released so many good things.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2. Yeah. They had lots of games for the PlayStation 2 as well.
Okay. But there's a nice ponder.
So, yeah.
That we've done there.
Yeah, it's a nice ponder. Moving on to PlayStation... Again, to an interesting... Sony have made various moves in the past, and this one, I think, was kind of an obvious thing that was going to happen. Sony have removed, or are removing, by August the 31st, movies and TV shows from the PlayStation Store.
Good. There's multiple reasons for this. I mean, honestly, yeah. I don't think it was making that much money for him.
Nah. At the end of the day, there are much better and much cheaper options for movies and TV shows than, you know, getting them off the PlayStation Store. Let's be honest. I mean, with Netflix, HBO Max, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, there are so many better options than the PlayStation Store.
That's the reason that they've actually came out and, yeah.
You know, it was something that was going to happen at some point. Okay, back in the day, maybe it was a nice thing to have, you know, being able to watch movies and stuff like that on the PlayStation Store. But I think the days of a console being an entertainment system, like a multimedia system, I think those are gone.
I don't think they are.
I don't think
it's a place where you can have all of your streaming services and you can just have them all and watch them all from there. But beyond that, like buying movies from PlayStation, like remember on the PlayStation Vita where you could get UMDs of movies?
Hmm.
I mean, this is a long-term experiment that Sony have been part of to release movies, and honestly, it's not the wisest. That being said, I wouldn't think it'd be the worst idea in the world for Sony to actually make their own streaming services because, let's be fair, they have all of the anime companies and streaming companies under their wing, so there's like a big chunk of what could go in that like hypothetical streaming service, And also, they're a major distributor of movies worldwide as well. So they have the history, yeah. They have the back catalogue, they have the assets. So to get rid of this buying, yes, and renting movies and make their own streaming service, which is heavily on anime, but also on their new stuff. Of course, the people who have like Crunchyroll and Funimation and all that nonsense will start crying, but honestly, they cry all the time anyway. Yeah, I'm just scorched earth today, Rob. I don't care if you upset them. Scorched earth, baby.
I'll be honest, Sony have the clout where they could literally just buy Crunchyroll and Funimation.
They already do, don't they?
Right.
They own one of them.
I think they own Funimation.
Yeah, I think so.
I can't remember. I'll have to look into that. Let us know who Sony own, if they do own anyone, in the comments below. The problem with the anime side of things is that Sony is kind of becoming much more Americanized.
Well, that's anime though, isn't it?
Anime is still a niche thing. It is and it isn't. There's still a lot of stuff that isn't Americanized. And so if an American audience watches it, it just, you know, it'll go over the heads. Anime is still a niche thing. Okay, it's a lot more mainstream now than it was before, but it is still very, very niche. There are still, and Sony, you know, Sony basically, especially with the PlayStation, all but turning its back on Japan. I'm a bit concerned about that side of things. I don't think that's a reflection of Sony as a corporation. I think that's more just the PlayStation side of things.
Let's talk about that a second. I don't think Sony PlayStation have turned their back on Japan. I think they are reacting to sales and market data and trends. And the sales and market data and trends for Japan isn't as strong as it used to be, because it is largely a handheld industry that, or a handheld marketplace that commands there. And because Sony don't have much there, and all of the game studios and developers are much more interested in that handheld market, you know, it goes together. Saying Sony abandoned Japan is just such a staggering amount of ignoring what's happening in the world.
Just to touch on that, right? Yes, okay, valid points, all. But in terms of in future, it might be that Sony are actually not going to focus as much on Japan and will focus more on China and Korea.
Yeah.
There is a reason I'm saying that, because it ties directly in with the PSVR.
And Europe as well.
See, China and
Europe
Korea
are growing.
Not so much.
But they are growing.
No, but this is, but I'm focusing solely on the PSVR too, right? And there's a reason why I bring that up, because the whole subject of virtual reality gaming is a massive one for science fiction in China and Korea, a lot more so than in Japan, right? There are a lot more, there's a lot more fiction in Korea and China about virtual reality. They're a lot more enamored with the whole idea of virtual reality. So if you can crack virtual reality, I wouldn't put it past Sony to focus more on China and Korea in terms of marketing the PSVR 2, in terms of pushing it forward, because those will be bigger potential markets for them than Japan will be.
Yeah, let's just relate it to movies for a second.
Yeah.
Between the 60s and late 80s, Italian cinema was huge. Now it's dead. Between the 60s and mid 70s, the Czech cinema industry was very prolific. Now it doesn't exist. Mm. Prior to about 2000, the Korean film industry was much quieter than it is now. What I'm saying is, just because a country used to do something doesn't mean it always forever will do it. Things change.
Exactly.
Times change. Priorities change.
Yeah.
And that's all I'll say.
Yes. I mean, Britain used to dominate the film industry for a while.
No, I'm not getting into that. That just makes me angry, but yeah.
Yeah. But we did, but we don't anymore. We, you know, and that's a prime example of it. And yes, that's the case. Anyway, moving on from that to our final bit, which it kind of made me happy and sad at exactly the same time when I read this story. It made me happy that we're actually doing something that I agree with.
Okay,
but it made me sad. It made me sad that this is still going on and that it happened in the first place. So EA have basically given a lifetime ban to a young lad who was playing Ultimate Team mode using Ian Wright as his icon card, and after he lost the game, sent 20 racist messages to Ian Wright via Twitter, with, you know, death threats and all sorts, just because he lost the game of
FIFA. Hang on.
So,
Arsenal and Crystal Palace legend, striker, and general lovely guy, Ian Wright.
Yeah. And the guy was using Ian Wright as his icon card, and then because he lost the game, made all sorts of horrible remarks and threats to Ian Wright. This happened in May of 2020. The case went to court, and the young lad apologised to Ian Wright, pled guilty, and he wasn't given a criminal conviction as the judge considered that he had shown sincere regret, to which Wright has said he was disappointed because this was about consequences for acts of racism, which I'm in total agreement with, you know, because there aren't enough consequences for acts of racism. So with EA giving a lifetime ban to this young lad, which I am in total agreement
with. Just before you go any further.
Because there is no place for it. I can't
really comment on this story because, yeah.
I understand it's not an easy story to talk about. No, I mean, just
general experience-wise, having not experienced racism living in a primarily white country.
Tell you what, next time I go to Bangladesh, I'll take you with me, right? Then you can experience it.
I don't think I like that. But it's fair, isn't it? I mean, there's lots of white people who claim to be champions against racism, but they can't really be because they've not experienced it.
Exactly. I mean,
let me guess, the judge was white.
Well,
no, I'm saying that because that. I mean, if Ian he Wright had any sort of empathy for what Ian Wright and his fellow black footballers are going through right now, he wouldn't have just basically said, oh, well, he's learned his lesson.
Well, not just right now. I mean, throughout his entire career, Ian Wright and other footballers of ethnic descent have put up with racism pretty much all their professional lives and all their personal lives as well. And this is the thing. There is no place for racism.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're all the same species. We're all human beings.
Yeah, I mean, Wright made some comments that which I thought were they were quite appropriate and actually highlighted an aspect of this case that I think doesn't get focused on. He said, my forgiveness of this young man was for my own deeply personal need and desire to move forward without further anguish. I'm a 57-year-old man that has experienced racism throughout my life. I wasn't expecting my forgiveness to be an invitation to lighten a sentence. You know, as an individual wished death upon me because of my skin color, no judge's claims of naivety or immaturity will ever be accessible to us. The supposed immaturity or naivety of our attackers is never any comfort. So, yeah, I am disappointed. I'm tired. We're all tired. Quite telling, isn't it?
People are just people. All that's different is what the pigmentation of our skin.
As much as EA gets criticised for all sorts of other things, which I agree, they are, some of their practices have been, you know, shady and have been questionable and sometimes they've been downright abhorrent. But on this one thing, you know, if they are joining the fight to stamp out racism and they're going to be active participants and they will actively lifetime ban people who are found to be racist, I'm all for that.
They can't really do that though, can they? Like, you just get a new PSN name and start again fresh.
Yeah.
The only thing they can really do...
Well, I mean, all your...
I don't know whether they could do this or not, but maybe there's like every system has... I think it's an ISBN number. If you blackball a device rather than an account, that might be how you do it. Because I don't think anybody, possibly, if they got caught like red-handed with this, buy a new PlayStation just to play FIFA again. I don't think they'd do that. A new Xbox. Yeah. I don't think they'd do that.
Well, to play Ultimate Team, I don't think they'll stop them playing FIFA, especially if they've got the disc version of FIFA. They can still play it against their friends and stuff like that. But stopping them playing Ultimate Team, stopping them playing online against other people.
There'll be a way to do it.
It depends how much this
is just like a simple platitude and how much is actually you taking a stand. Because the reason why I say
that's why I said
is because remember the George Floyd thing last year And everybody posted those black squares and said, we stand together against racism. And that's all they did. They put out a nice flowery tweet saying, we stand against racism. But did they change their behaviour? Yeah. Did they change their attitude? Did they change their business practices? Did they give priority to people of colour when looking at new interesting projects to get behind? Projects which wouldn't have got like an ounce of airtime otherwise? Or games that have black leads or people of colour leads? Mm. No, not many have done that. So how much is reality and how much is platitude? That's what I'm saying.
That's why I said if EA are taking a stand against racism, then I'm all for it. And it's a big if. So I will personally be watching this this with interest. I don't know about anyone else, but...
Besides COVID, the real virus of our times is racism. And I'm not going to get into it too politically, because I could basically rant for about an hour on that. But I'm not going to.
Yeah.
You're not going to.
Yeah. I know. I'm kind of the same.
Yes, once you rip the plaster off, you can't put it back on again, Rob.
You're speaking to a brown person who grew up in 80s Britain. Yeah. Especially in the north.
Yeah, that's it for this week. If you like us and what we do and you'd like to support us in whatever small way you'd like to, we have a Patreon. Two platforms, two podcasts are behind that. So do listen for them. Get involved for them. Support us just because you like them, whatever way you want to do it. But until next time, this has been News Trash. If you're listening to it's part of the podcast, stick around because we have another impossible mission in the back half. But if you're watching on YouTube, thank you very much for sticking around with us to the end, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, I'm Professor Elemental, and whenever I'm not riding a badger around my grounds or hitting my monkey butler with a stick, I'm listening to The Geek Show, and my God, I love it.
I'm Graham Williamson, and I like films starring pop stars. I like films about pop stars. I like films which have set design by pop stars. Probably gone a bit far there, I can't actually think of one of those. Anyway, this is why I've launched The Geek Show's new podcast, Pop Screen, where every week, me and a guest host take a look at one film, either starring by or about a pop star, and by pop I could mean anything from heavy metal to blues to disco to hip-hop, and we analyse it relentlessly, asking all of the big questions.
Ewan, who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Oh no. Can I say Richard E. Grant's my favourite Spice Girl?
And even giving some of the big answers with our unparalleled level of research and nerdishness.
I'm definitely a Beatles fan. I was on a Beatles tour taxi in Liverpool with my family, and the tour guide started referring to me for little details and to double check his facts.
So whether you're an absolute beginner or a 24-hour party person, get swept away. I'll stop doing this now, I promise. By Pop Screen, the new podcast from the Geek Show Podcast Network. It's about music, it's about movies, it's about nonsense. We're hosted on Audioboom and available on your podcast provider of choice, as well as the Geek Show's YouTube channel. Remember to like and subscribe.
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering, because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
Hello, and welcome to Impossible Mission. My name is Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And I don't know why I said it like that. Maybe I'm trying to get in the car commercial game.
See, now that you say that, all I can hear is, you can get your insurance from.
You can get your insurance from. Anyway, Because, you know, it's one of these things, isn't it? When you hear people on radio shows and they do the same introduction hundreds and hundreds and thousands of times, how would you do it differently instead of saying it the same time, same way every time? Hello, I'm Rob and welcome to Mission Impossible. That's the wrong one. Welcome to Impossible Mission. You gotta judge it up.
Yeah, Mission Impossible, we'll get into trouble if we call ourselves that.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, we might get hunted by Tom Cruise.
Well, we just put like a glass over his head and a piece of paper under him and then sort of open a window and just throw it out. I'm not helping, am I?
No, you're not.
I'm implying that Tom Cruise is a spider. Maybe. There was that theory of lizard men, all the high flyers and highfalutin people are lizard men, so maybe.
Weirdly enough, I quite like Tom Cruise, and I'm not saying that because there's a potential of us being hunted by him. I quite like him because regardless of what his personal beliefs are, he doesn't tend to turn around and throw them in your face. And I've got to say, the fact that he's willing to do his own stuff at his age and with the risk involved, I mean, that scene where he broke his foot jumping from one roof to the other, but still carried on. You can see him hobbling off the screen before he collapses in pain. I'm like, okay, I have to applaud the man there.
You know? Right. So, how do we segue out of that one? See, we're doing this new thing because once upon a time it was like, hello, welcome, Impossible Mission, right, let's talk. No fraternizing. But now, yeah, it was kind of limited. So, we're doing like a cold open these days.
Yeah.
If you've not noticed.
A while ago, last year, in fact, we predicted that there was going to be a drought coming. A drought of games, that is.
It's a fairly safe prediction, wasn't it? It's not like we're going to go...
It's a fairly safe prediction. And it seems that the drought is upon us. So we thought we'd basically have a look at the state of things as they are right now in the world of video games. The drought is upon us, but, you know, maybe in some ways not in the way we expected.
Yeah, I mean, there is an aspect of it. We predicted that there was going to be a lack of games because the backlog will be cleared.
Yeah.
All the games that were made and struggled to get made will eventually come out.
Yeah.
And then comes a time where games couldn't have gotten made because all of the development studios can't meet, none of the mocap can be done, none of this recording audio can be done. So there's that void, that space and time where nothing could get produced because nobody could collaborate in on site, in situ. Yeah. That is what we're experiencing. But the other half of the games drought has actually manifested in the actual devices, which... I think we saw coming to an extent because it's always hard to get a console just after it's released, but not this bad.
Yeah, I have to say it's a strange state of affairs because this is something that, you know, the whole situation is something that anyone with eyes could have predicted, you know, happening. And okay, we only predicted a part of what would happen. But, you know, when it comes to the device side of things, we're not at the forefront of that sort of coverage. But there are other people who easily could have looked at it and said, you know, this is going to be a problem going forward. You know, especially working for Sony and Microsoft.
The insiders.
Yeah, the insiders. Yeah. And see, this is the thing. When you look at, part of the problem stems from there's a global shortage of resistors and stuff like that. We know that. Another part of the problem comes from NVIDIA or whoever it is manufacturing chips for these consoles. But then you've got this whole thing where they release a certain number of consoles and then you have X number of them being snapped up immediately by scalpers.
Well, there was this stat. I know these consoles are released at a loss because they have to be.
Yeah.
They make the money back with software sales. But the scalpers have made more than this, than Sony. I know I explained it there because they release it at a loss, but just the fact that I'm able to utter that sentence, the fact that that reality exists, that people who scalp consoles, like buy them in en masse and sell them to make profit, manipulating and taking advantage of people who want this kit. They have made more money than the company who made the thing.
It comes to a thing where, and just to use your example from a while ago, where a store that you can trade in consoles and games, right? You can buy a PlayStation 5 from there for almost twice its retail value.
I think it was like 850 quid last I saw.
Was it 850? Because I've seen one for 1,000 in there as well.
Oh, wow. That's considerably marked up.
Yeah. And the fact that they can do that and it's legal, apparently. And I'm thinking, well, how can it be legal if it's a second-hand unit? But
yeah, I mean, before getting into the idea of the games drought, this is a thing which sort of like a point which is adjacent to an episode which we were going to record, but it just kept on coming out too angry. It was 2020 versus the video game industry.
Mm.
And this is one of the sort of the fallouts of 2020, I think, where some legal changes need to be made to stop these vultures taking consoles. Because honestly, it's bad for the PR of these organisations. It's unfair to the consumers to be able to want to buy something and being forced out of it by callous people who are just in it for themselves. Did you see that, by the way, before we jump back? They were saying, yeah, we're not bad people. We hate the way we're being characterised in the press. We do things for charity. We provide for our food bank. And also another one said, I need to do this to be able to make a living. As far as investments go, a $500, £450 machine is about as idiotic an investment as you could possibly make if you're going to be in something for the long haul and make like a nice little earning from it.
Yeah.
So the idea was that the Scottish government, Scottish MPs, are pushing to have this sort of thing illegalised in the UK.
And I agree.
And this is all like all the themes and all the ideas that I just mentioned there, they're all sort of like a hurricane swirling around each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's this strange mixture that's become this perfect storm, which has caused a major delay. I mean, we've seen games getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back over the last few months.
Well, the biggest one for me was Halo. Halo was supposed to be like a launch exclusive a launch game for the Xbox Series X. It's been pushed back a year.
Yeah.
I mean, fair enough, it didn't look good and the internet had its guts for garter or something, or some other old English figure speech.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's an amazing delay.
Oh, yeah.
And that's also because of COVID.
But, I mean, when you look at, like, video game releases, how many games have been, you know, pushed back because of changes to scheduling, changes to, you know, problems with development, or just, you know, it just simply won't work on whichever platform it's being developed for, so they have to rework it.
Yeah.
Wasn't Riders Republic one of them that got delayed, or was that Outriders? I can't remember.
No, it's Riders Republic. I don't recall them saying why they delayed that. It's probably one of those working from home made it difficult. Because let's be honest, another thing which haven't been talked about really by us anyway is how much this basically gave the business to Nintendo.
Oh, God, yeah.
I think they had like a Nintendo Direct a few weeks back, and between that one and the previous one, I think it was 500 days.
Yeah.
500 days before like a video of announcements, like a decent video of announcements. There was little partner videos, but general main things with big announcements being 500 days. And that's like a byproduct of pandemic, because yet they have struggled so much to cope with all of this.
And the thing is, when you look at what was announced in that Nintendo Direct, it wasn't anything particularly special.
Well, the big two were Mario Golf and Splatoon 3, and Splatoon 3 is going to be out whenever it's out, and yeah.
And Mario Golf? Really? That's your big title?
I'm more of an everybody's golf man, but yeah.
Yeah, but okay, just golf games in general, okay? And I disparage that as a sport anyway.
I'm not a big fan of golf, but a good arcadey golf game is amazing fun.
Yeah, an arcadey golf game can be a lot of fun. And I agree with you on everybody's golf. Mario Golf being a big title for your big kind of video conference based thing.
Yeah, and also, I think, what was it, the 35th anniversary of Zelda? And
yeah,
all they've got to announce for it is a HD remake of the most loved one in the series, Skyward Sword.
Hang on. On what planet was Skyward Sword the most loved one?
Loved.
Oh, loathed.
Hated.
I thought you said loved. I was going to say. Okay, loathed.
Because people say hate an awful lot. And, you know, it's kind of devalued as a word, so.
Yeah.
Loathed mega hate. It. They're mega hated Skyward Sword.
Yeah, they hated Skyward Sword, and yeah, announcing that as got a HD remake, oh, I laughed.
On an anniversary of Zelda.
I laughed. I laughed so hard.
What they could have done, the same with, like, Wind Waker.
Yeah.
You've done that again.
I actually almost fell off my chair when they were showing Skyward Sword.
Yeah, so Nintendo, I really, really struggled.
See, you know, if anything, they could have just gone back to one of the classic Zelda games and just re-released that. Or, you know, you could have done one of the, you know, a new version of Super Mario RPG. Why not?
Well, considering it's a Zelda anniversary, that'd kind of be weird. But, yeah.
Okay. Make those Panasonic Zelda games canon then and remake those. If you're going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel with the most hated Zelda games, it's not Skyward Sword.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's looking kind of weird going forward because, yeah, the Xbox Series X, as far as what's been announced, everything is years away. The new Forza, don't know when that's going to come. Halo, later this year. Fable, I don't know. Perfect Dark, I don't know. So, really, it's got to this point where, at least with Xbox, I'll get a PlayStation in a minute, where, why bother?
Yeah.
Because everything has been so damaged and so pulled back that you could get one in about 2 years and it would probably be about the right time to do it because there'd actually be games being released in a sort of semi-regular rhythm that they were promised when they were promoting these things.
Yeah.
And PlayStation, we've got, Ratchet and Clank, Returnal.
Crash Bandicoot 4.
No, that's already out, isn't it, so...
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that already out?
It's been out a while. But yeah, like Ratchet and Clank and Return.
Oh no, the PS5 version of that isn't out yet.
That's just an update, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's like two games. That's not justifying like a purchase of a 500 quid machine.
Oh, Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, that's already out. I'm on about coming up.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's so true. It's kind of in a weird... You could get one, but there's not really anything to play in it, and it's not going to be for a good while.
But you can, but and I'm gonna do a different voice for this. But you can play your PlayStation 4 games on your PlayStation 5. It's worth getting for that.
Can I burn my ears off? go to the ear shop and get some new ears because I think that voice, my ears have been sullied.
That was the whole idea of that voice.
I don't want these ears anymore, Rob.
But you know, like... you know that voice.
If only there was an ear shop, I'd be right there, front of the line.
But yes, that voice is the voice of so many people who say exactly that and have said that to me, and quite literally. Oh, you can play all your PlayStation 4 games on your PlayStation 5, so it's worth getting one. And my retort to that is, I can also play all my PlayStation 4 games on my PlayStation 4 Professional. Why would I bother paying the excess money to buy a PlayStation 5?
But the thing is...
To play the one game that I can play on it at the moment, which is Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card, that, isn't it? It's sort of, there's nothing coming out for it, but you can play all this old stuff and it looks slightly better. It's basically the the best worst case scenario for either of them right now.
Yeah.
All your old stuff looks slightly better and loads a bit quicker. Yeah, but you don't get a new console because something loads slightly quicker. You get a new console because that day, that first day when you get it and you got that excitement. I mean, look, talk about when you're a kid here. You got that excitement where you got a new machine and you can't wait to play it. You can't wait to see how much better it is than the previous one. And you want that excitement. to be filled by, yes, but you can play the old games on it and it looks slightly better and quicker. Just no excitement to it whatsoever. It's just such an anti-climax. And the game's drought is the cause of that.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, because of the lack of consoles going around, it's not worth developers rushing to get games finished. It's not worth their time. No, because they're not going to meet the sales targets. There are so few consoles that have been sold. And in terms of numbers, in terms of propagation, and in terms of just how much of the population have either a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series X or S, regardless, right? In terms of that, it's not worth any developer's time pushing themselves, killing themselves to get a game out, because it's not going to make them that much money. And by the time that enough people have, you know, one or both of these consoles to make that viable, most people are going to have forgotten the game that they put out all that time ago anyway. So what's the point in putting a game out then when they can just delay it until more people have the console and then it becomes financially viable?
That's why we've only really had two next-gen exclusives, I think. Demon's Souls and The Medium.
Yeah.
Everything else has been cross-gen.
Yeah.
Because they have to.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Okay, Demon's Souls, it's not a bad game.
It's not a console seller.
No.
It was for a lot of people. The community who loves that sort of demon dark.
The community who likes the whole Soulsborne type game.
System seller to them, but for everybody else, nah.
Yeah.
And The Medium, even less so. It's probably got the interest of a lot of people who like horror games, but
again,
it's kind of like a C-grade horror game, not like a major one.
Yeah, and again, you're talking horror. Horror has always been a niche area of video games. A popular one, but still niche.
Yeah, I mean, look at the release in Resident Evil 8 on the original, or the old consoles, and I think that's going to look terrible, frankly, but...
Yeah.
All those ridiculous tall lady memes will look terrible in old in previous gen. Did you not see that? You know, when they released the trailer for Resident Evil 8, the whole internet went, "Tall lady is tall. Lol."
Yeah. See, I never understood that whole tall lady is tall thing. You know, I'm looking at her and I'm going, okay, yeah, I'm terrified of her. I don't know why the internet loves her so much. I'm actually scared of somebody that big who could crush me with one hand.
9'6", apparently.
Yeah. Not that I really needed to know. I would say bye from a distance. Let's put it that way. I would be literally on the next mountain waving bye-bye and then taking the next flight away.
Yeah. But let's just wrap it up on this, I think. We talked before we recorded this about how Marvel, the cinematic universe, has really benefited from a year off.
Yeah.
Having a break from something, it makes you really appreciate it when it's back. Admittedly, WandaVision is one of the best things that they've done, in my opinion, but that distance is sort of kept it, the fatigue away. It's kept it fresh.
Yeah, well, it's also allowed them to go back and just be a bit more creative in their approach, I think.
Get back to basics.
Yeah.
And I think there's a similar thing for games as well. We are so invested in video games. We're so invested in the lightning pace of what's this, what's next, what's next, what's next, that we kind of forget that there's a human cost on the other side of this. And sometimes having a break, breaking the pace up, breaking the regularity of release up, having a different tone of pace can just make you appreciate it a little bit more, rather than, right, I've 100%ed that, what's next, what's next, what's next. You don't appreciate it, whereas slowing the pace down allows you to take it all in a little bit more.
The interesting thing about what you've said there is that last year, during 2020 and even up to now, the price of PlayStation 2 games and other retro games went through the roof. And so the fact that, though, that happened, and with a lot of these games, you don't get trophies or anything like that, you know? So they're not playing these games or collecting these games for the trophy aspect, they're collecting them because they genuinely want to play them or want them as part of the collection, but in most cases, they probably just want to play them. They'll have heard about a lot of these games but never actually had the opportunity to try playing them because there are so many other games available.
Yeah, I think, just to wrap this up, there's a weird side effect of this whole moment in time. The number of studios being bought,
yeah,
small independent studios, it's going to sort of lay waste to the middle ground of AA and indie games this whole era, because, you know, these companies need the stability of being purchased by a bigger company, whether it's Tencent, Sony or Microsoft, gives those companies stability.
Yeah.
But in them having stability, the true meaning of indie kind of gets a bit...
Well, it's mushed. What I said... Yeah, it's what I said to you before. My biggest fear with all this, with all these big companies purchasing these small companies, you know, Amazon is probably going to buy more studios at some point. Google's already looking at certain studios. You've got Microsoft buying them. You've got Sony buying different studios. Tencent are buying studios. You've got so many. And my main fear, as I said to you, is that video games will become homogenized, and we already see that in the generic third-person action-adventure genre.
With RPG elements, don't forget that.
Yeah, with RPG elements. Sorry, I forgot to include that. Because in a lot of those games, historically, you didn't have RPG elements.
Yeah.
Or they weren't called RPG elements anyway. They were just called stuff you did when you leveled up.
Yeah, but we're straying into another topic there, so we'll wrap this one up for this week. But we'd like your thoughts, you know, get involved with the conversation, whether it's down below on YouTube, or if you're listening on the podcast, go to thegeekshow.co.uk, you'll find all our social links there. So send us a message. Get involved with the conversation. We'd like to hear what you think about this too.
Yeah. So if you've liked the episode, then give us a thumb, a sub, or a bell. And if you want to see more videos like this, then you can support us on Patreon. The details are in the description. That's all from Impossible Mission for this week. Join us every other Thursday for more video game chit-chat. Until next time, thanks for watching.